Good morning, everyone. We are back to this question, I guess, to a new portion of this discussion. We have finished part three. You may say, well, we're taking a long time to get there. So after all these hours, we finished only three parts. But really, we are not going all that slowly. The lectures are planned so as to lay down the foundations rather well. So I have to use an extensive part one, because in that part I had to dwell on emotions which often stand in the way of progress. I needed to give reasons for refusing to turn this into a Bible study. And also because I needed to explain what we discussed, the place of the Bible. We discussed the use of reason. All that had to be said. And in part two, we discussed foundations. Theology proper is about, and that it is not found in the Bible. However, we do need the Bible. And I explain the reasons for that. So maybe it would be nice if I wrote a list of things that we are doing, so that you see where we are. In part one, we discussed. Let me copy everything out. We discussed background, we discussed emotions. We discussed the tools that we need. So these are up here. These are preliminary considerations. And these are foundations. The nature of spirit. The nature of therefore, the nature of God. Discussed the nature of man. We have discussed the nature of space and time. And these three are connected. So those are the first two parts. And in the third part, let me put the third part down as well. Part three. The first part of that, the first portion of that part was biblical, the biblical position. That constitutes about half the paper that I gave you, the 31-page paper. And the purpose of that, of the biblical portion, is to show that it corroborates the findings of part two. And then it goes beyond that to show that it establishes the threeness
of God.
And then in the second part, that was theological part. We established in that the use of hypostases, and hypostases. And then we had a third part, which was problems and in that we had things we can say, what can be said and what cannot be said, can be said such as let me not say can be said. The problems. Let's just leave it like that. We discussed whether we can or cannot say two beings, and obviously the answer is we cannot say two beings. We can say one family, and I explained that both in the lecture and also in the paper, and three beings. And then it's also the meaning of Elohim. This is not exactly in order now, but it doesn't matter. Elohim, Yahweh. Let us make man. I did not go through that in the lecture because I gave an extensive account of that in the paper. Let us make man. And the people who read that paper told me that it's more than ample to establish the point. And we discussed God's image in the image of God. Discussed that. Etc. A number of other things. So that's where we are at the moment. At least if you have that, you know how the lectures are arranged. And I put extra emphasis on these parts because we need this. So this is heavily weighed in these three parts. Now this was the largest part, part three. That's why I gave you the long paper, to save me lecture time. Of course, if you're not going to read that, then there's no point in listening to the lectures. So you must read the paper. And now we go into part four. Part four discusses the relationships in the Godhead. I have a brief section on the procession of the Holy Spirit. And we'll discuss the creation as well. And I begin that with a question. This is the relationships in the Godhead. If God is one, how are relationships possible? Does God address himself? Did Christ pray to himself? If God is one, we have only one being. Was he his own father? Now, I do not know how to read that question. There is one way I could read it very mercifully, shall we say, or I could read it as it is stated. It begins with an unpleasant word. If God is one. Now that question is not proper, because We have already showed that God is one. So what is the meaning of if? In other words, I get stuck when somebody says, if God is one, as if we have been wasting our time discussing the subject. Now, it may mean something else. When it was first posed, I probably thought it meant, let's say, just a connective. Let's just talk, and we can't find the right word, so let's say if. But I would take it seriously. I can either take it as a glib reference to a question, as a sort of way of speaking, and we mustn't give any weight to the word if, or we must give a weight to it. Either way, it'd be safer if I explain what is wrong with it, and that way, we will remember it. Let me give an argument. Let me erase the board now and give an argument regarding the word if. I have not discussed this to the same extent in the conferences, but that's all right. This is good. Since I give you extra information, when I come to your regional conference, you can pay me then for the extra services. This is to illustrate the use of the word if, because it comes up every single time somebody puts a question, and I'm going to read you many, many questions after this time, and they all seem to begin, at least most of them begin with if. And I think that's very naughty. Right? And if I explain it once, then probably we'll understand something. So if questions are going to come in on the material I'm covering, you will know what I expect from the questions. Supposing I give you an argument. Let me write an argument out. A simple argument that we all understand. If I say all dogs are animals. Let me number the premises. It's the second premise. Rover. Let me stop here. All dogs are animals. I better put a star here and put a clarification here. Say, I do not mean the edible ones. Edible dogs, like hot dogs, in other words. Hot dogs are excluded, and things like that. You know, so the asterisk tells me that I'm taking the word literally. All dogs are animals. Rover is a dog. And of course, that's the same sense as that. So, I can put a conclusion here. Three. Conclusion. I conclude that all animals are dogs. I wrote an argument. Two premises and a conclusion. So, you may say, well, no, I'm not very happy with that. You know, that's not very clever, is it? So, now you can raise objections. And you can say, here's my question. You can send me a letter. Or a letter to Mr. Tkach or somebody. And say, dear sir, if all animals are dogs, why do we call some of them lions? You can ask that question. The answer to that is, I don't know why we call some of them lions. So, answer, I don't know. That's it. What else can you say? That's finished. I have answered your if question. Now, the correct thing to do is not to go through the back door, so to speak, to question my this thing here, but to look at the argument itself. That doesn't look, that thing here, this if question, focuses only on this part. That's what it focuses on. It ignores, right? It ignores the thinking that went into the argument. Now, between you and me, of course, this is false, right? It is invalid. It is not a valid conclusion. It's not an acceptable conclusion. But what should have been done is this if must be crossed out. I'm going to cross out that if, and I cannot start my sentence with if. Because nobody is proposing that all animals are dogs. Nobody is proposing that. The proposition is that number one, premise number one, and premise number two, taken together, lead inescapably to this kind of nonsense here that I have written. So that is the claim, that if we take premise one and premise number two, this is where I would come to in the particular kind of thinking that I used. Now, if you're going to, you cannot question just that. You cannot question a portion of my statement. You have to look at the correct thing to do is to skip the word if and go and look at this material up here. That is what should be done. You say, what can I look at? What can I say then? Well, you can say, you can write a letter and say, you have omitted to take number two into consideration. You have not taken this point here. See, my conclusion, all animals are dogs, does not take into consideration this second premise at all. It doesn't say anything about the drawer. So that's what the mistake is. The mistake is in that this thing has been omitted. All I did was take all dogs are animals, and from that, I concluded that all animals are dogs. So I ignored the second premise. That is where the mistake lies. That's one mistake. I gave the impression that I have a second premise, which I have not taken into consideration. And there's another mistake. The other mistake is this one. In using the first premise, all dogs are animals, I am not allowed to reverse it, to convert it, in other words, to draw the conclusion that therefore all animals are dogs. And you can give example after example after example of that. For example, you can say, all people who are born in California are Americans, American citizens. You cannot convert that to say that all American citizens are born in California, because they don't have to, they could be born somewhere else. So you cannot take an all statement and reverse it. Now, so here's what you should say. You should not just focus on the conclusion and waste my time and yours discussing a portion that you don't like. I don't like that conclusion either, but it's a waste of time to sort of focus on that and ignore what has been said. So the correct thing is to go back and say, where is the mistake? The mistake is in omitting number two, not taking into consideration at all, and in wrongly reversing number one. Now that is, and therefore I don't discuss. Now given that, then I can cross out all this thing here. And I write the truth underneath it. And the correct answer would be, rover is an animal. So I point out what is wrong with it. The mistake was here. That's the first mistake. And the second mistake was here, in reversing the premise. And if I correct those two mistakes, then I get this kind of answer, therefore rover is an animal. So then, I am not allowed to say, if the conclusion is right, then what? All questions which begin with if are naughty, this is a rude approach to the question. So let me read the question again. If God is one, now that ignores what I wrote here earlier about part one, part two, and I wrote earlier part three, which I erased. It ignores part one, it ignores part two, and ignores part three, and concentrates on the conclusion that God is one. So we are doing the same sort of thing here when you say, if God is one. It ignores the argumentation. So it's a disrespectful approach. The word if shows disrespect to the argument. It shows a poor disposition towards facts and truth. Once part one has finished, it established certain things. Part two established some other things. Part three helped us to arrive at other conclusions. Now, those conclusions must be respected, or they can be corrected if they are wrong. But they cannot be ignored. And the word if is an ignoring word. You may say nobody has made such a big fuss over one word. But now, I have made it clear. So I can go on with the question. Let me read the question again. If God is one, and I don't like that, so I will not read it. I'll read it again. Read the question again without this rude beginning. How are relationships possible? Does God address himself? Did Christ pray to himself? Was Christ his own father? And so on. These are questions about relationships within the one, within the Godhead. So we will begin those to answer those questions. But as I said again in the beginning, the if may be meant to be just a way of speaking, not to be taken seriously. How do I know that? I don't know that. If this conclusion is right, given that kind of beginning, there is no way that I can know how you meant the word if. So I have to guess. And I don't like to guess. Therefore, please cut it out. I'll erase the board now and we'll discuss the questions. We concluded that to be God is to be infinite. If we say the Father is God, we mean the Father is infinite. If we say the Son is God, the Son is infinite. But then, given the infinity of the Father and the infinity of the Son, let me write it out because you see what. Given the infinity of the Father and the infinity of the Son, what is this? What does this word mean? That word is useless. It's empty. It's meaningless. Meaningless. Except as, you know, as I am not. Let's define now. So what that word does is, it does not add. It does not add. Because there aren't two things to be added. To add means you have two things. You have one, and you can add something else, something other. But how many, given infinity plus infinity equals, what does it equal? Well, this is meaningless. In terms of all, you know, God. So I could say, the point I'm driving at is, there is one infinity. So, if I have to, infinity of the Father and infinity of the Son equals one infinity. And I am not pressing the word one too much. Because I'm using numbers again. So let me repeat. It is meaningless to speak of two infinities. You cannot say this infinity and that infinity, because that puts limitations. And limitations are not true of God. Now, I could try to restate it correctly. I can say, since infinity is only one, that way I avoid the word if. So I say, since infinity is only one, when we speak of the Father and of the Son, we are speaking of one and the same infinite being. That's what we are saying. That's the correct way to phrase it. Now, when people hear infinity, they say, "Well, you mean like a blob, of which half is the Father and the other half is the Son." No, I don't mean anything like that, because the word half is spatial. Forget it. Blob is spatial. The word like is meaningless. Like, God is not like. So notice how many words we sort of are cluttering our thoughts. God is, if we say God is like a blob, like, wrong word. Blob is spatial, in which half is the Father, half is spatial, and the other half, other. The other is not a word we can use. Half is a spatial term, is the Son. Now, again, I come to this point. We are discussing theology. We are not discussing Bible study. In Bible studies and sermons, it's perfectly all right to use and, to use if, and in whatever popular locutions, whatever society expects us to use. That's different. This is all, we're discussing concepts. Are our concepts correct or are they incorrect? All the revelations of God in the Bible are given in finite terms. That means in terms that Israel could understand, that the church could understand, and that others could understand. But we've got to forget equating what the normal person understands with what must be true eternally of God. So when we read in the Bible that God is walking in the Garden of Eden in the afternoon of the day, we must not conclude that therefore God has feet, or that he needs feet, or that God is limited in space. He is not. Now, I mentioned yesterday that the color white garments in Revelation means something. It meant something to Israel. It did not mean something in Rome. But in a technical sense, if you want to be specific about and accurate about the color white, if you were a physicist, in other words, a scientist, you would say something along the lines that whiteness is the reflection of the light rays, how the rays fall off the surface of material objects. That's what you would say. But when you say material objects, you are talking about the created world. So how created light behaves in relation to objects that are created inside the created order. And therefore, God cannot be placed inside that order. We cannot say that God has white hair or has any hair. We cannot say God is like. And in Acts chapter 17 and verse 29, I'm reading Paul's words. For as much then as we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is like unto gold or silver or stone, graven by art and man's device. See, it's not like anything like that. It's not like anything shaped by art or man's imagination. And John's Gospel makes clear in chapter 4 and verse 24 that God is spirit and must be worshipped in spirit and in truth. So we have to say then, the Father and the Son are one infinite being. And infinite, by infinite we mean in all ways unlimited. So you can ask a question now, which is practical. You can say, what do I do if I don't understand or if I cannot imagine infinity? What are you proposing that I do? Can I imagine infinity? No, I cannot. I can write the word on the board. I can write the word infinity on the board. I could, by that, I do not mean an infinite line. That's not what I mean. I mean infinity. All comprehensive. Something that comprehends everything. So, without limits of any sort. If you cannot imagine infinity, and none of us can, then we have to rely, we have to go about our daily lives with concepts that we can understand. However, we must not deny the Bible, the claims of the Bible in any way. So, just to show you how we are limited, we can say that a child has a limited conception of numbers. A very young child, you can ask a child, how many legs do you have? And the child will say two. But if the child is very young, and you say, how many legs does a horse have? I tried that when one of my children was young, and I said, how many legs do you have? He says, two. And I said, how many does a horse have? He says, many. Because at that age, he could not think. He could not imagine four. The legs of a horse were many. Now, he was on the right lines. There's a difference. He doesn't have to be accurate. It doesn't matter if he's accurate. He is definitely in the right direction. But if he said, the horse doesn't have any legs, he had said that, then he is in the wrong direction. Because the word many does not deny four. But the word none denies the word four. Now if he said three, again it denies four. If he said two, again it denies four. If he means the totality of the horse's legs, the totality is four, is two, then he is denying the other two. Now there are many things we can imagine and many things we cannot imagine. All that is irrelevant. What you and I are capable of understanding in our minds is totally irrelevant. In other words, if I put an argument on the board, here is an argument that is valid, even though it may not be understandable. If I say, let me not talk about animals and rover, I'll say, all or blinks.
Blanc.
And they say flig is a blink. Therefore, flig
blanks.
Now, like that's pure nonsense. And yet, if this is true, and if that is true, if I accept that one, I have to accept that one. So, now, I don't have to understand, I do not understand the meaning of those words, because I just made them up. And they don't accept anything at all. All that I'm using it for is to show that if this premise is granted, if this one is granted, that one follows necessarily, even though I do not understand any of the terms. And we do the same thing in mathematics. We say to the child, 1 + 1 = 2. He says, 1 what? And we say, it doesn't matter. He says, I don't know, I haven't seen any one that is not one something. Have you ever seen a one that is not one something? No, you haven't. There is nothing in the world that is just one. There isn't. There is an apple, there is a pear, there is a horse, there is a house. One house plus another house is two houses. Yes, I understand that. I understand 1 horse + 1 horse = 2 horses, but I don't understand 1 + 1 = 2. But there, what we do, we demand, here's what we demand. We demand abstraction, abstract concepts. That's what we demand. We do not want to speak about 1 house + 1 house. We do not want to speak about 1 apple + 1 apple. We want to speak about abstract things. And we demand the acceptance of abstract notions in children, because we realize that the mind of man needs to be developed. So, the point is, it is true, too, is true, whether I understand it or not. It may be too abstract, but it is true nevertheless. Therefore, you cannot come back to me and say, oh, the things that you are saying are a bit abstract. Now, that argument I am answering now. The correct question to ask is, what else can be known of the Father and of the Son? Now, that's a good question, because then we can discuss something that will lead somewhere. And here is where we can all turn to John chapter 1 and verse 1. In the beginning was the Word. Now, Mr. Armstrong thought that the word Logos meant a spokesman. You may say, where did he get that? He got that from Moffat. Now, here is an example of quoting somebody else. I mentioned earlier that quoting other people is not the way to arrive at the truth. Because if the scholar you quote is right, you're lucky. If he is wrong, that's it. You go wrong too by relying on him. So, the Logos means a spokesman. That's what Mr. Armstrong thought it meant, because he got it from Moffat. Now, Mr. Armstrong did not claim to be a Hebrew and Greek scholar. He did not consider himself to be an expert in Greek or Hebrew, but he relied on other people for that. And when he reads Moffat, he thinks, well, this man must have done his homework. He must know what he's talking about. And he reads the spokesman, so he accepts it. But notice what's happening even when you quote scholars. You really, Moffat says one thing, says spokesman, now that could be right, or it could be wrong. You don't know. If you are not an expert in biblical languages, you cannot know if that is a true statement or a false one. So you accept it. But you know what you're doing? You are also drawing a line here, and you say this is the explicit statement of Moffat, and here is my understanding of it. My understanding of Moffat. So you say this is implicit in that. You think that's implicit in that. So again, you are, in reading Moffat, you are reasoning. This line shows that, you know, where this is where you are reasoning. If you like, this is the exegesis, in other words. If you want a word, here is the word. This is how you explain that. This is your understanding of that. So you have a text, and you take it, you look at the explicit statement, what the actual word it says, and you understand it. Here is what you get out of it. You get exegesis. That's your exegesis of that. But the exegesis then is always based on reason. And people who say there is no reason, right? They say, we must not reason. We do not want reason. Well, that is nonsense. So the truth of the matter is, there is no non-reason. You have to deny that. Deny that. People tell me never to use double negatives. Well, here is one. But I can rephrase it if you like to avoid the double negative. I could say there is no going away from reason. That's it. That's how I have translated. This means there is no way to avoid reason. Because you are reasoning regarding Moffat. You are reasoning regarding anything you read. So Mr. Armstrong reasoned, right, that Moffat was right. He said, this man is a scholar. Scholars know what they're talking about. So he must have it correct, and he accepted it. And Moffat was wrong. The word logos does not mean spokesman.